So give thy servant an understanding heart to judge thy people, to discern between good and evil. For who is able to judge this great people of God?
This does show great humility. You know, he could have been very proud. His father had prepared all of this stuff for Solomon to build God a temple, for the nation to come and worship him. So many young people, I don't know exactly how old he was. I'm not good with the dates and ages, I see. But he was young. He said he's a little child. And I don't know that he was a little child in stature, but in what he felt like was in wisdom and knowledge. And so he asked God, he said, I don't know how to go in and come out. In other words, I have no idea how to lead these people. I don't know. My father was a great king, but I don't know how to do that. And so he asked God for an understanding heart so he could be a good king. And so that showed some form of wisdom, even at a young age, to be able to realize he didn't have wisdom, that he needed this. If he was going to be the kind of leader his father was, that he needed God to help him and give him guidance. And so to me, that shows in the beginning that he had a tender heart toward God and he wanted to please God.
I find it interesting that he here is praying and he's trusting God, the Lord, to give him the good gifts that he needs to govern. And then, of course, we'll see later in his life, he turns to other gods. So, on the beginning, with an honest heart and seeking to do good, he turns to God. And then, as time goes on, he turns away from seeking God for those good things.
And we see that in ourselves, don't we? You know, if people are first baptized, their zeal is just uncontrollable almost. They just have a great zeal to work and serve. But so many times then, something happens, and we don't seek God. We don't put God first. And so it's that we do the same thing Solomon does. We fall into a pit if we're not careful. Solomon did not do what God in verse 14. Let's look at verse 14 of this. Susan Dunbar, would you read chapter 3, verse 14? And we're going to see the conditions. God said that he's going to do this, and he's not only going to give him discernment to understand justice, but he's going to give him riches and honor, and there'll be no other king like him in your day, in his day. He was going to be the greatest king in his time. But there are some conditions. Susan, read verse 14.
So if you walk in my ways to keep my statutes and my commandments as your father and your father, then I will live in your day.
Okay. But there is a condition. And this is what Solomon did not do. You've got to walk in my ways, keep my statutes and my commandments. And he keeps using David, as your father David did. Did Solomon probably know? I mean, Bathsheba's his mother. Do you think he had some idea? The people in the palace are going to talk. I'm sure Solomon knew that his father was not perfect. And yet, he is held up as an example for Solomon to follow. Because when David was confronted with his sin, he repented immediately. So this is when God appeared to him in a dream at the beginning of his reign and told him to do this. Let's look at chapter 6, verse 12 and 13. This is at the time when he's getting ready to build the temple, or is building, while it was being built. Carol, would you read chapter 6, verse 12 and 13?
Concerning this house which you are building, which you will walk in my statutes and execute my ordinances and keep all my commandments by walking in them, then I will carry out my word with which I spoke to David your father. I will dwell among the sons of Israel and will not forsake my people Israel.
So here again, it's restated. You've got to do what I say. Basically, is what this is telling Solomon. And it was, as Solomon was the king, he was to be the leader, and he should have set the example. Because even if he had set the example, the people may not have followed. But it was his responsibility to be the leader in this. Because he says, if you will walk in my way, then he would do what he told David, and that would be that have a one sitting on his throne. And it was intended to be over all of Israel. One more time, let's look at chapter 9, verse 4 through 5. And this is after, at the end, when the temple has been finished. The Lord appears to him a second time. And he heard his prayer, and he's consecrated the house. But there's a condition. Elizabeth, would you read verse 4 and 5?
As for you, if you will walk before me as your father David walked, in integrity of heart and uprightness, doing according to all that I have commanded you, and will keep my statutes and my ordinances, then I will establish the throne of your kingdom over Israel forever, just as I promised to your father David, saying, you shall not lack a man on the throne of Israel.
Okay. So we have this if and then. If you do this, then I will do this. Let's read verse 6 and 7. Tammy, can you do that, or have you got your hands full back there?
But if you or your sons indeed turn away from following me, and do not keep my commandments and my statutes, where I have set before you, and go and serve other gods and worship them, then I will cut off Israel from the land which I have given them, and the house which I have consecrated for my name. I will cast out of my sight. So Israel will become a father and a byword among all people.
Okay. So here, there was an if and then. If you do what I write, what I command and do right, then this will happen. But if you do not, then this will happen. And so when we read in the New Testament the promises that God has given us of eternal life, what is the other side that he tells so many times in the same passage? If you do this, then I give you this, but if you don't, what will you get?
Eternal damnation.
Exactly. And so what makes us think that we can pick and choose what God wants? We're going to look at some passages probably next week in the New Testament that we don't always understand. But we have to do them whether we understand it. And some of them we don't like. We just have to be honest. There's some that we wish were different. I do. But that's not what God says. And God has a purpose for what he does, and he doesn't. Sometimes he tells us, sometimes he doesn't. And in Solomon's case, which we're fixing to get to here, he gave him a reason. And Solomon's the engineer. So, we have to keep in mind that, and when we read these Old Testament passages, it's teaching us that God keeps his word for good, and he keeps his word for punishment. So, if we do not keep God's law and live the way he wants us to live and has commanded, we're going to have eternal punishment. Okay, what showed that Solomon's heart did not remain true to God? Yes, that's in chapter 11.
They also worship their gods, build idols and temples for them.
That's exactly what God has said, though. They will turn your heart away after other gods. And so, I don't know if Solomon thought he was so wise that this would not, that he could not be tempted, he could not be drawn away. But he loved these women. And what happens when you fall in love with somebody?
They become first.
That's exactly right. You do. And so, God told him not to do this. It was very specific. And it's interesting, in a lot of the passages we read, it had to do with idols. You know, don't go after other gods. That has been God's commandment since the Ten Commandments. That was the first commandment. No other gods before me. And God knew that there were so many idols in these nations that they were going to be going through, and that is why he wanted them to keep them separate. And I'm sure this is one of those laws that if we just stop and think about it from a human standpoint, you know, two people fall in love, how can that be bad? How can that be wrong? Their paths cross. You know, some of these women they kept for slaves and things like that. Most of the nations they totally destroyed. But God said, don't marry them. Don't have anything to do with them. And but they didn't listen. And Solomon didn't.
Married more than one, some ladies.
Yes. Well, yeah, he had. You know, I've often wondered why Solomon had so many wives. And then, how many sons did Solomon have that we know of?
One.
That's
mentioned in.
You know, all these other kings, all their sons are listed. And yet Solomon only, to our knowledge, only had one. And there's a, he, in all the lists, I think there, I mean, in the readings I've done, he had four or five daughters that were talked about. So he did have some daughters. But, and we don't have any idea how many daughters he had. I don't know if he felt like it was the women's fault he wasn't having kids and he wasn't having boys. I don't know, but that's always been a, you know, you think, how can one person love 700 women, 1,000 women really, because he had 700 wives and concubines, and 700 wives and princesses and 300 concubines, 1,000 women.
You can't even get around to all of them.
No, he wouldn't. And that was another thing. God never intended for them to multiply themselves wives. That was another thing that God never intended. From the beginning, it's been one man for one woman, because that's what Jesus went back to in the beginning.
You know, even in those days, as we see in today, countries of that region and everything have wives, and it is a sign of power and, you know, rich and, you know, wealthy, but, you know, and being admired by other men. They use women as a property, and it seems like those nations of those countries, even at that time, you know, had that loss.
Well, they've not changed anything. They didn't turn to God, so why would they change anything? In fact, what I've heard on the news is that these suicide bombers and all that, one reason they do it is in heaven they're going to have 10 virgins. They're going to start out with 10. So, you know, that's, the sexual relationship is a wonderful thing, and God intended it for good. But anything that has a potential for good can be used for evil. And the sexual relationship is one of the things that has been so readily used for evil. And it's so simple, and it's so much better and so much more happiness when you do it God's way. But anyway, so then down in verse 11 through 13, Solomon has done this, and he's gone after these, he's married all these women, he's built idols for them, and whether he worshipped them or not, I don't know, but it wouldn't have, I would not have thought he would have had much trouble with it. Why, if you're going to build an idol, anyway. All of this was contrary to what God had told him, so he was not walking as God had told him. So let's look at verse 11 through 13. Amanda, would you read that, please?
The Lord said to Solomon, because you have done this and you have not kept my covenant, my statutes, which I have commanded you, I will surely tear the kingdom from you, and you will give it to your servant. Nevertheless, I will not do it in your days for the sake of your father David. But I will tear it out of the hand of your son. However, I will not tear away all the kingdom, but I will give one tribe to your son for the sake of my servant David, for the sake of Jerusalem, which I have chosen.
So, Solomon, you know, and then from then on, he had issues. There was one person after another confronting him. And God had promised him peace, and he had peace up until this point, evidently. His son would only have a small portion. Benjamin had kind of been dispersed in Judah, and so he basically had the tribe of Benjamin and the tribe of Judah. And we see that when they went out to go to war farther down with them, and he told Benjamin and Judah to go home and not fight against their relatives. Okay, so briefly, after Solomon died, what happened to the nation that Solomon ruled? And how?
Israel went into captivity, never to return, and then Judah was taken into captivity by Nebuchadnezzar for 70 years, returned. But still, God, the passage we read a while ago about Israel becoming a reproach, the people who lived in the land and the people who fled to Egypt, and even Egypt, it is restated again. I will make them a reproach, and then by famine, by sword, he annihilated them. And so they, God tried to work.
But even before, they did go into captivity, but even before they went into captivity, how many good kings did Israel have?
None.
And how many did Judah have that were?
Not enough.
Or probably that did anything worthwhile.
Well, there were four, that Baasha, Azariah, Uzziah, and Jotham, that were mostly good. They weren't the best, but they were mostly good. And then they had some that were very wicked. Manasseh was the most wicked king, I guess, they had. But what did he do at the end of his life?
He did.
Yes, he did. So they had one that was bad, that turned good. And then Joash started out good, but he turned bad. And then they had three other kings that were said to be good. Elah, Hezekiah, and Josiah were good kings. It was not anything much bad that I remember at all. So God kept his word because of Solomon's sin. And like Linda said, yes, they went into captivity. Israel never to return again. And Judah only to return until the Messiah came, and then their lineage was destroyed in AD 70, and they were never the same again. So if God will do that to a whole nation, what will he do to one person? If he tells me to do something and I don't obey, how do I expect to? Do we think because we're little and insignificant, sometimes I think we'll slip through the cracks? Somebody used to say when I was young, they're going to get into heaven, but it's going to be through the fool's hole. There's no fool's hole to get into heaven. You get into heaven on purpose, not by accident.
You know, people think that Adultery is so great. Marriage and remarriage, mm-hmm. possibly, is so great in the nation that God
should
have to accept it.
Mm-hmm. But what does he say about how many are going to get in? Very few. So what was the root cause of the problem in the nation? It was Solomon's problem, and what was the root problem that kept causing this to happen?
They forgot their God.
They did not keep themselves holy, did they? And they turned against God. They continually worshipped idols. But God, as I stated before, and we're not going to take time to read this because we all know, God said, no other gods before me. I'm the only one. And they continued. They brought idols with them from Egypt. Because Joshua, when he's talking to them, he tells them to put the idols away that you brought from Egypt. And then we turn around and we find in Joshua, that was in Joshua 23:14. But then what was the very first thing that Jeroboam did as king?
Set up an idol in
Bethel. Bethel and Dan. He set up a golden calf in Bethel and Dan. And it sounded good. What was his excuse?
So everybody wouldn't have to go all the way to Jerusalem and he would lose his subjects.
Well, he didn't tell them. I don't think, and that was in his heart. But he told them, it's too far for you to go. And so, but in his mind, if they go back down to Jerusalem, they're going to go back and they'll go back under Rehoboam. So he was afraid he was going to lose his kingdom. And then by the time Kings 18 and 19, what's Elijah fighting with Jezebel about?
The gods.
Baal. They were worshiping Baal. The children of Israel were worshiping Baal. And that's when they had this confrontation, and all of her prophets came, and Elijah's by himself, but God took care of it. And so And then in Ezekiel, we get all the way down to Ezekiel. The people are in captivity, but what's going on back in the land? They're idol worshiping in the temple. Ezekiel 5:11 through that sixth part, the first part of chapter 6 there. So this was the root problem of them from the time they left Egypt, was idolatry. You would think all that God did for them, they would be so thankful that it would be easy for them to serve such a loving and wonderful God. But they never truly turned their heart to Him. They always had the idols. Even when the kings who were good, Hezekiah and Josiah, it talks about that the people's heart did not turn back to God. That the kings made reforms, but the people didn't change their heart. They did what they were told by the king, but it did not change their heart. So that's the problem. We have to be sure what our heart is. We have to have our heart to do things that even we don't like or don't understand. This is the next question. Is it possible that they didn't understand all the reasons for some of the laws or even like them?
Yes.
That's very possible.
Especially when it was their priest who started taking bribes, and you know, the priests weren't telling them what the law was or teaching them the law the way that the Lord wanted them to. They forsook the law, and they took bribes, and they told them what they wanted to hear, and so they just went along with it. So when you got the king and then the spiritual leaders leading the Lord, there goes the boat.
That's true. But what, whose responsibility was it to teach their children what had happened and what God had done for them? The parents, that's right. Everybody. It was, so it's easy to make an excuse. Nobody taught me. And I guess if your parents didn't teach you, you are kind of at a loss. But we can't lay it all at the priest's feet, because if each parent, if it had started, if they had done what God told them, when you rise up, when you sit down, when you're walking in the way, whatever you're doing, you'd be talking to your children about God. But they didn't. So what we need to bring it back to us today is, what legacy am I leaving my children? Do I talk to my children and my grandchildren and my great-grandchildren, in my case, about God? Do I try to instill in them, we have to obey God, we must put God first? And do they see that in my life? Do they come in my home and I tell them, oh, you can't watch that, because that's not good for kids to watch. If it's not good for kids to watch, it's not good for adults to watch either. Nudity and profanity and open sex on the television is not good for anybody to watch, or to go pay your money in a movie to go see. You have to live before your children what they hear you tell them to do. And you have to tell them. You have to talk to them about it.
I think it's interesting that Hosea both talked about that. Therefore, my people go into exile for their lack of knowledge. My people are destroyed for lack of knowledge, because they have rejected knowledge. They didn't listen to the prophets, you know. So, you know, some of the prophets and everything, God lays it at, you know, not only the prophecy or the kings, but the people. They didn't listen to the true prophets, and they went into exile for the lack of true knowledge.
Right. So what was the problem with them having a king in the first place? You think, oh, this is all Solomon's fault. If they'd have never had a king, maybe this wouldn't have happened. That's right. The people rejected God as being their king. Let's look at 1 Samuel chapter 8 and verse 7 and 8. Melissa, would you read that, please?
The Lord said to Samuel, listen to the voice of the people in regards to all that they say to you. For they have not rejected you, but they have rejected me from being king over them. Like all the deeds which they have done since the day I brought them up from Egypt, even to this day, in that they have forsaken me and served other gods. So they are doing to you also.
Well, this has been their problem all along. God was never their king. God was never the most important thing in their lives. Pleasing God was never the most important thing. they've done this, he said, from the day I brought them out of Egypt. They've rejected God. So we need to be careful that we don't give lip service to God, but rather give true service and obedience to him. Okay, this next question, I don't know, after I got to reading it, I thought, well, I hope this makes sense. But I asked you to write briefly in who and how they tried to stop God's plan. And the plan I was talking about was preserving the promise to David and bringing about Christ as the king, and to be king over everyone and the king of our lives. So we're not going to read all this because we don't have time. But Numbers 22-25, what's going on there briefly? Balak wants Balaam to curse the people of God. And Balaam starts off real good. He's, you know, I can't say anything but just what God told me. And that was right. That was what was true of the matter. But what was Balaam's heart? What do we see that was Balaam's heart?
He wanted the
money. He wanted the money. And the prestige and whatever else came after it. And so he says, he told the people the first time, spend the night, and I'll go talk to God. And God comes back and says, no, you can't go. So come back, and then the people, Balak sends people more important and more gifts, and everything makes him look better. It's better. This is the best deal. And he wants to go, and so he asks God, and what does God tell him to do? The second time.
Go.
But then, verse 22, God was mad. God was angry with him. And he tried to kill him three times. And it would have killed him had it not been for the donkey he was riding. And then, to me, he gets down in verse 34 of chapter 22. And Balaam said to the angel of the Lord, I have sinned, for I did not know that you were standing in the way against me. I sinned because I wanted to go. You know, I sinned against the donkey, basically, to me, is what he's saying, because he wanted to kill the donkey. And then he says, now then, if it is displeasing to you, I will turn back. You know, God was mad. He tried to kill him three times. But instead of saying, I'm going home, I'm done with this, Balak can figure out something else, I'm not helping him. You know, God, if you really don't want me to go, I won't go. A three-year-old should know by then that God didn't want you to go. Of course, we know he went and he cursed him. But that was not the end of the story. We find in, let's look at Numbers chapter 31, verse 15 and 16. Lauren, would you read that, please?
15 and 16?
Mm-hmm.
And Moses said to them, have you kept all the women alive? Look, these women caused the children of Israel through the counsel of Balaam to trespass against the Lord in the incident of Peor, and there was a plague among the congregation of the Lord.
Okay. So, we're not going to take time to read it, but that happened in Numbers 25, 1 through 9. It doesn't tell us in 25, 1 through 9 that it was through the counsel of Balaam. But Balaam couldn't get the money one way. He could not curse them. But he knew how to get them. And he knew how to get Balak what he wanted. Problem with the children of Israel. And God to be mad at them. And punish them. And that would destroy a lot of them. He wouldn't have to do it. God would take care of it. And so, Balaam never learned his lesson. I don't know why he was a prophet of God. But God chose him. But he didn't seem to love God very much. He wanted what was best for Balaam. But he was not able to destroy the whole nation. A lot of the nation, they were punished. But Balak could not destroy all of the children of Israel because it was not God's will. God had promised to David that there would be a king on his throne and it was going to carry through. Well, actually, this promise was to, the promise back here would have been to the Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, really. I haven't even gotten down to David yet at this point. But the promises to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob had been made. And God was going to keep that. It was going to happen through David, but God was going to keep that. If all the that nation would have been destroyed. David would have never been born. Okay, in 2 Kings, actually, let's look at 2 Chronicles 10 through 12. That's, I don't think I put that on there, but that was, it's a shorter, more concise. Nadine, would you read that, please? 22, 10 through 12.
Now when Athaliah, the mother of Haggai, saw that her son was dead, she rose and destroyed all of the royal offspring in the house of Judah. But Jehoshaphat, the king's daughter, took Joash, the son of Haggai, and stole him from among the king's sons who were being put to death, and placed him and his nurse in the bedroom. So Jehoshaphat, the daughter of King Jehoram, the wife of Jehoiada the priest, for she was the sister of Ahaziah, hid him from Athaliah so that she would not put him to death. He was hidden with him in the house of God 6 years while Athaliah reigned over the land.
Okay, so Athaliah, her son dies, and she kills all her grandkids, or at least some of her grandkids. He may have had more than one wife, so I don't know that all of them, this was his mother. So, but anyway, she killed her grandkids. What kind of grandmother is that? She killed all the seed, she thought. But one was spared because his aunt basically saved him. And here again, had she had her wish, all of the seed of David would have been destroyed, and there would be no king. But no matter what evil things people do, we cannot stop God's plan. God's going to do what God's going to do. We think we can outsmart God. We can't, and we never will. God is going to do what he has said he's going to do. Okay, any questions about that? One more. And we're not going to take much time on this because we could spend bunches of classes on Esther. But somebody give me in a nutshell the story of Esther.
So she becomes queen and then tries to annihilate her people and Mordecai's step up and they put the king to judge and get him killed instead.
But she saves her nation. Here is one more time, had an evil person had their way, and this evil person had power. The king says, kill them all. And but God is more powerful than any king on earth, and his will is going to be taken care of. That's why when God rules in nations, he rules in the kingdoms of men. And as a side to God's will always being done, it's a comfort to me. Because I don't have to worry about who's going to be president. I need to vote. I need to try to make an educated vote to try to help my nation do the things I can. But God's in control. And he puts them in and he takes them out. And so all I can do is trust God that if I serve him, there's going to be a better life than this one. And so this was three times in the Old Testament that I thought of where somebody tried to stop God's promises and could not. Does anybody else, could the males think of any others that where someone tried to thwart God's plan to no avail?
I think it's interesting if you go back and read it begins. Why are the nations in an uproar and the people devising a vain thing? The kings of the earth take their stand and the rulers take counsel together against the Lord and against his anointed Savior. And then it goes down further and he says, God speaks. But as for me, I've extolled my king upon Zion, my holy mountain, and I will surely tell of the decree of the Lord. To me, you are my son. Today I've forgotten you.
and then it goes down and it finishes the psalm. Do homage to the Son, that he will not become angry and perish in the way. For his wrath may soon be kindled. How blessed are all who take refuge in him.
And that is still our comfort today. God's King is on the throne today. The one that's going to reign forever. And his will is going to be done. But there are wicked people, and we pay for their actions. But it's great comfort to know that God, nobody can stop what God has promised to do. So I have great comfort in knowing that I have a better life than this one. Okay, anything else before we stop? We should be able to finish up next week. If we don't, we'll go into December one week, but I'm pretty sure we'll be able to finish up next week. The things that we're going to be looking at are all things that we understand, but just to look at some things that maybe we don't understand why God does what he does and has given us the laws he's given us.